Hello, 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 and welcome to Buzz Binging. My name is Natalie.
And I'm Christy, her mom.
And we are going to be covering Peaky Blinders Season 6, Episode 1, Black Day, and Season 6, Episode 2, Black Shirt.
Okay, that sounded a lot more fun, you know.
Did it?
Yeah.
Did it, though?
It did. So, yeah, we're going to have our usual caveats and disclaimers. Ha, both of them. And that includes that there's going to be cursing, most likely. That there will be spoilers, possibly.
And, who cares?
And there's a spoiler for you. And we are having things to drink. What are you having to drink, Natalie?
So, for context, my roommate had an internship this past spring. And in her welcome basket, she got two Coca-Colas. And neither of us realized that we hadn't put them in the fridge. And I assumed that she wanted them, even though she doesn't really drink soda. I don't know why I thought that. But a couple of weeks ago, I was like, hey, can I just have that Coke, those Cokes? And she's like, yeah, no, I wasn't going to drink them. And they're completely flat. So I'm having flat Coke.
Sad. There's a lot of sad in that story.
You know what? There's a lot of pathetic in this story.
The season. Yeah. No, I agree. So what I am having is like Tommy Shelby. I'm having water because like Tommy, I can see that I get a little worked up when I have alcohol. And so whatever. I will have stuff at other times. Anyway,
let's get into Season 6, Episode 1, Black Day. The gun Tommy had to his head was empty because Arthur took the bullets out. Good for Arthur. Good for Arthur for reading social cues. Arthur, we'll talk about Arthur. Lizzie finds him and calls him a coward for trying to leave his family behind without a goodbye. She leaves him with 6 bullets to give him a choice, and he has a two-face moment with mud on half of his face.
I saw that too.
It was a little bit too perfectly symmetrical. So I was just kind of like, okay, you're going for two-face, aren't you?
Yeah, like, why are we having...
Are you going to flip a coin? Like, come on.
We got Scarecrow, we got two-face. What the fuck, man?
They're all here. He goes home, all in that one field too. He goes home and gets a call. The IRA stopped his plan to assassinate Mosley and deliver the dead bodies that accumulated. And they're like, oh, well, we toppled down one of the pillars of your organization. So that he sees that Barney, who was going to be the sniper, was obviously killed. Abarama Gold is dead as well. And also, unfortunately, because the actress Helen McCrory died in between seasons, Polly is also killed off. We never see her body, but she is killed off.
It's terribly sad, and Helen McCrory was fabulous. So
yes. They have a funeral for Polly. Michael blames Tommy and swears to take his revenge, even though Michael isn't really in much of a position to, but fine.
Yeah,
I understand they were put in a hard position with the death outside of the show, and they had to make something work. But Michael, they give it up. Like, there's so much weirdness with it. I don't know.
Yeah. Let me say this. At the end of the last season, they have that cliffhanger and Tommy's talking about, I don't know, what man could have, thwarted my plans like this. And I was like, man, it's going to end up being Polly, right? That actually thwarted the plans. That's what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. And of course, because we don't have Polly, they, I'm sure, had to completely change direction with, and I'm not even saying that's the direction they were going, but I am certain that they had to be flexible with what was available to them. It's really very
well,
sad.
We know who thwarted the plan. We know who called, who that guy called, though. I don't know, but I guess it was the IRA. I didn't know he was involved in the IRA, but I don't think the writers knew either.
He is now. So
he is now, and we never get a resolution to that story. And who cares? So then they So it's 4 years later, it's 1933, and it's about to be 1930 bad. Well, it's getting closer to 1930 bad. I'm sorry, I'm quoting the John Mulaney sketch of I am 16 going on 17. Actually, I'm 33 from SNL. That me and
I
my
didn't
friends really, really love
hear
because
that.
he has one line of it's 1930 bad. This is gonna be the least of your problems.
Okay.
It's funny. I'm
Okay.
sorry. That was for my friend Caitlin. So in it's 4 years later, 1933, at Miquelon Island in Newfoundland, a French territory in Canada. Tommy is going to meet someone, and we see Michael with some guys and a mustache are going too. So they're going to probably meet up.
Michael mustache, it means he's a fascist. Sorry.
Oh. Tommy
There
thinks.
is a point to that, actually.
Tommy thinks one of them will die during the interchange, and so he tells a cop nearby of like, "Hey, if or somebody nearby, of hey, if I die, call my brother." Then he goes to a pub and gets water instead of his usual Irish whiskey because he has gone sober. It's a black day, and prohibition has ended, which is unfortunate for the bootleggers who were in Canada and required the prohibition and the higher price of alcohol to survive, essentially. And so he talks to a former bootlegger about that. Who?
You are skipping my favorite scene in this entire
No, he
episode.
wasn't. He hasn't even attacked him yet.
Okay, go ahead.
What are you talking about? Pay attention. He goes.
I actually was like tuned out. The build up to my favorite scene is pretty slow.
He talks to a former bootlegger who blames him for their loss of business and for their whiskey business. Tommy mentions he's sober. There's a very brief fight. You can do your scene. I have a quote from that scene that I really like as well, but you can go ahead and say what your piece is about that scene.
So the guy is very threatening. He wants Tommy to drink because this is, it's their fault that they've been running alcohol, and now that prohibition's gone, they feel like their economy's going to go to hell or whatever. And so he's like, "You're going to drink because you put us in this position of being out of work," or whatever it is that he's trying to claim. And he is about to try to physically force Tommy to drink, which is a mistake. And Tommy says, "I stopped drinking alcohol," and he's giving this speech.
Oh, can I do the line?
Please go ahead.
He says, "Since I forswore alcohol, I have become a calmer and more peaceful person," he says while holding a gun to their heads.
That was after. So
Oh, well,
before that, he slices the guy's face open with either his cap or a knife. And he's like, "I forswore alcohol because it was making me violent. Now I'm a calmer, more peaceable person. But every time, I have alcohol, it seems to bring out the violence in me," or whatever. And he's holding a gun to everybody. In this sequence, he fires the gun, shoots a pigeon. some stuff happens, and I will say this: I feel like much like the grace breathing stuff, which does appear in this
you
episode.
cannot unhear it now, can't
No, I
you?
can't. Although
I'm sorry I told you about it.
I will say this, and something one of our listeners mentioned.
Mean Dad? I love you, Dad. Never change.
That ominous sense that the breathing is supposed to bring
It's
is
just used too often, in my opinion.
no.
I'm fine with it being there, but
Can I
it's
finish
used
the
too often.
thought? That would be fantastic. So the ominous sense that you get with that is designed because he actually cares about getting rid of the fascists in a way that he hasn't cared about anything since Grace. And the last time he cared about whatever, about something, he fucked it up and Grace died. And the same thing he's worried is going to happen now is like he's going to lose something close to him that's important to him. And so that ominous breathing is part of it. But we learn as the season progresses that the breathing may also represent Polly. And so when he's shooting and he like shoots this random pigeon, it's like, he may be accidentally just damaging like the, so it's not even a pigeon, it looks like a dove. It may be, like damaging someone that he cares about in his outpouring of anger and violence. So, but he also gets control of the situation. He goes upstairs to meet with the people he's intending to meet with, which include Michael and Michael's cohort from Boston. You can proceed.
Great. Yeah, he Tommy says his revenge on Polly's killers takes time, even though Michael's upset and it's been 4 years, but okay. Lizzie and Ada, when Michael brings up the family, we flash over to Lizzie and Ada, who are looking after their kids along with Johnny Dogs' kids on Christmas Day. And Lizzie and the kids are going to Canada the next day to be with Tommy. Arthur is supposed to play Santa, but he's too drunk. Tommy then.
Is funny because it looks like Charlie, Tommy's son, has shot Arthur and he's like dead on the stairs and Santa suit's like
Well,
above.
he plays dead for Charlie's benefit, but yeah.
It's cute.
Tommy talks about how repealing prohibition will make it harder to sell liquor, but they can switch to selling opium working with contacts in Belfast, which he essentially is working with the people who killed Polly, but great. Then he wants to work with Jackson ne Jack Nelson. I don't know why it autocorrected to Jackson. Jack Nelson.
AI sucks. I'm just gonna reiterate that.
Great. Gina's uncle in Boston. Tommy tells them there is a mole in their organization in Boston, and he gives Michael his briefcase. He gives the former bootlegger his card, and as he leaves, and he's like, "Don't burn it this time." And Ada then talks to Arthur, then Lizzie about the situation since Polly's died. She's essentially tried to take Polly's place as like the mother hen, trying to like keep everybody's shit together, even though like. It's been 4 years. I think that the time jump doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I think that they could have easily, I think it's probably just to coincide a little bit more with the rise of the Nazis, but
It
at
is.
the same time, it makes this whole like, not to say you can't grieve someone for a long time, but the way they're grieving Polly, it's been 4 years. Like,
It feels very fresh in the way that
it feels a little too fresh for it to have been 4 years, but either way, so then Tommy calls the cops on Michael, and because he planted opium on him, and he gets arrested. Ada talks to a teenage Carl, and we find out she doesn't work for Tommy anymore. She answers the phone and is upset because, and then she finds Arthur, who went on a bender, and she tells the people he's with not to sell him opium anymore on Tommy's orders, and writes his name on his chest with lipstick, reminding them who he is and not to sell to him. Gina visits Michael in jail with a long hallway shot, which was unnecessarily long, with multiple shots that did not need to be there. I don't need to see Anya Taylor-Joy walking down a hall. I'm fine. They talk about their son missing him. So I don't know where you got the fake pregnancy from in the last season, but no, it wasn't fake. She had a son.
I just don't like her.
Okay, but that doesn't mean she's having a fake pregnancy. Anyway, he Michael talks about how Tommy wants to work with her uncle and how her uncle can get him out of jail because he has contacts in high places. We'll find out how high later. He wants to do this one thing to stop working with to for Tommy. I don't know why this is the last thing. It's been 4 years. You could have stopped it anytime. Tommy meets with Gina, and he tries to give her a message for her uncle. She says her uncle says no deal about the opium dealings. He tells her that he tipped off the cops and he's the reason Michael's in jail. His message is if Uncle Jack doesn't buy his opium, he will sell it to the East Boston Jews, his words, not mine,
Yes.
the Solomons, which would start a gang war, essentially. Tommy is cheating on Lizzie with a whore, and he gets a call from her telling him that Ruby has a high fever, their daughter Ruby, and potentially the flu, and they can't travel. He has gotten them a place out west where there'll be snow, probably like Colorado or something, somewhere in the mountains, I think he says. Or maybe just out west in general in the
Canadian
US.
Rockies. It could be Canadian Rockies. We just don't know.
Oh, that's true. I didn't think about that. But he was in Boston at the time. That's why I was thinking US. But Ruby was repeating some Romani, the
Gypsy language.
yeah. Over and over, and when she was delirious and saw a man with green eyes and a gray suit, and he Tommy says he's going to go home early and get Johnny Dogs' help because he thinks it's a curse, and he doesn't fuck with curses ever since Grace. He visits Michael and tells him that he'll be in prison for a while longer because Uncle Jack doesn't want to make it seem like he's playing favorites in the prison system. And he's actually, Uncle Jack and Gina are going over to London with Tommy.
Right, and he's pointing out that Gina's in Jack's camp, not in anyone else's, and that Michael needs to understand that people are fucking him over, but Michael, of course, doesn't believe him.
I don't care.
What were your best parts of this episode?
I said Tommy's guilt, I guess, over Polly, I guess. And Ada. Ada actually does shit. Like I was surprised by how much I've liked Ada these past couple seasons. Like she's been one of those people, except season three. Season three, she's stupid and communist and whatever. But season four, five, and six thus far, I really, really like Ada and her like trying to bring the family together in a way and just being the sane one in a situation. Whereas in like the first two seasons, she
Dependable.
was, yeah.
She's a dependable person. Yeah.
And during like the first two seasons, she was a little bit more headstrong and defiant. But now she's just kind of like accepted the way things are. And she's not entirely just gonna roll over and let something happen to her. She's still not that kind of person, but she is willing to compromise with her family, which is something. So yeah, that's all I had. Oh, and that fight scene is fun, I guess.
I do really enjoy that fight scene. It's probably the best scene in the whole season. So,
Yep, that's
sorry,
true.
that's a spoiler. I
No,
like that
it's true.
Tommy and the sobriety thing. I feel like that current, and another spoiler that may change, is something that that is it's meaningful. I like the way some of the writing is. I don't necessarily think that it moves the plot, but I like the writing of the conversation between Tommy and Lizzie about Ruby. They talk to each other like real people, like real parents, which it shows a level of normality we have not seen with them at all. I don't really care about Lizzie at all, and I don't really care about the subplot at all, but I do like that conversation is pretty normal. I like the fact they honor Polly. I really felt like they did a good job giving her a send off, and you could see how much the actors even care about Helen McCrory's person. And I feel like as a setup for this season, despite the fact that the season has a lot of issues, it gives you kind of a structure, and as a first episode of a season should. So those things were good. What were your worst parts?
Polly's death, so sad, but again, unavoidable. No, yeah, unavoidable. I mean, you also could have said, oh yeah, Polly has gone off with a
Michael
tribe.
to Canada, or with a gypsy tribe,
That
right?
would get that. I was thinking a caravan of some kind, and she just wanted to get away because Aberama Gold was dead or something. But I think this makes the most sense for the kind of show this is. And
Yeah.
so, but I don't know. I think they could have done her death differently, where it wasn't that kind of thing, but it could have happened during the time jump. You know what I mean? Of like, it wasn't a result of that plan, but it was a result of a different plan Tommy had. And that's what happened. And that could have been something where it was like, we have that moment, 4 years, we see the 4 years later title card, and we see Polly's funeral, and then and they're sad, and I think they wanted to make it somehow Tommy's fault, But I guess it makes sense. I don't know. I don't care. It's over now. Grace is breathing too, again. It's just used too much for me. I understand the merit of it. I understand why it's there. I just think that it's too used too much, and I can't avoid it. Too much silence. There's some moments where it's just really empty and boring, and I'm zoned out. Lack of subtlety sometimes, like Ada talking to herself about, oh, now I'm Polly. And it's just like, okay, we didn't really need you to vocalize it. Or, I mean, if you were going to vocalize it, you could have done it in a better way. And I mean, I think that's just a symptom of the problems that have happened in the last couple of seasons of, like, especially season five, of a lack of subtlety in the writing. And also Arthur. They just waste Arthur in this season, and it is pathetic. Like, Paul Anderson is an amazing actor. They know that, and they're just having him be high and drunk this entire time. And it's not like he gets a lot of screen time, let's be clear. He barely gets, he gets crumbs. Like, he gets absolutely jack shit. Like, I, of all the people to have him not have something to do, it's ridiculous. And considering, I think they're trying to attest it to, like, oh, he's depressed about Polly, but they're acting like Linda's going to be a cure for this sadness, even though Linda, it's been like 4 years since their like divorce or separation or whatever they did, and she's off and fucked off elsewhere, and so it doesn't matter. So yeah, I think that they just waste Arthur in this season, even in this first episode, and it gets even worse. Spoiler alert, it gets so much worse. He's just so wasted. He's barely in any scenes, and whenever he is in a scene, he's just drunk and sat down and on the sidelines, and he doesn't even really get a plot for himself this season, and that's just disappointing. Like, he's so talented. Just give him something to do. You know you can do it. So yeah, those are my worst parts. What about you?
Michael, I feel like you're
Oh
him.
yeah, Michael, he's useless.
Yeah, the repetition of the slow walks, the slow everything, that build up to that first good scene. It's like the pacing is just like, oh my God, Montage City. And I really, it wasn't even montage so much as just slow, 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 slow. And I, yuck. So yeah, and I agree with you. I didn't point out about Arthur. It is interesting that you're the person pointing that out, since I love Arthur so much and you're usually complaining about Arthur.
Usually complain about him. I'm just noticing he's there, but they're not using him.
So anyway, we have season six.
Overall
What grade? What
grades,
grade?
C.
Oh wow, I gave this a higher grade than that. I gave it a B plus, A minus, because it has some really good scenes in it.
Like,
Where
other than
does
the fight scene, name one other scene.
I kind of like Tommy confronting Gina. I think that that's a good scene, where he's basically telling her, look, I know what you're up to. I know more than you think I do. You are just a stupid little girl. Stop it.
Fine, I'll do a C plus.
Okay, fine. Because trust me, there are other grades that are not good.
Actually, no, I'll do a B minus. Yeah, I agree. There are worse ones. All right, season six, episode two, Black Shirt. We hear Polly and Michael's voices in Tommy's head. They use this one line of like, one or both of you will die or something like that. They use that line a lot of Polly's just playing in voiceover. Tommy returns home and reunites with his family. They are going to visit a doctor, even though Ruby is feeling better. Tommy throws up outside the doctor's office because he's so worried. Lizzie tells him that everything was clear. He hasn't slept since the phone call. Lizzie feels like she's just an item on a list he needs to check off when he suggests they go home and have sex. And
Truth in that.
Lizzie hears something, and it's Tommy having PTSD and having a seizure in the bathtub.
Right. This performance, this seizure performance, is just like, wow. Wow. Wow.
Yep. It's not the first time it has happened, but he refuses to see a doctor about it for reasons I can't explain. He feels like he can't rest until business is done in Boston. Tommy talks about at a Labor Party rally about not wanting to stay silent. That's all I got from that speech. Laura McKee, who is the IRA person who kind of brought about Polly and all their deaths because she ratted them out. She shows up and he talks with her.
That goes on way too long. I was
Tommy
not.
has a private letter from the President of the United States to Nelson, so FDR to Nelson, I guess. Nelson is into fascism and Tommy has contacts he can offer to him, including Dublin, if McKee agrees, which would persuade Nelson to deal opium for them in Boston.
Right.
Ada shows up and tells Tommy that Arthur has been using more drugs. She found like an empty needle next to him, and Laura agrees to the proposal. Laura McKee. There are now train tracks towering over the garrison. It's a sign of the times. Ada
I didn't even
confronts.
pick up on that. I
You
zoned
didn't?
out a lot in this episode. I saw them, you're standing at the garrison talking about how they used to get beers for their dad there. But I really just, I wasn't even paying attention to why they were talking about it.
And Ada then confronts him about working with the fascists still, and he's just like, yeah, well, don't worry about it. Tommy visits Alfie. Alfie's into opera now.
Yeah, he's listening to a Caruso record. But he's into opera because he thinks it's like the death throes, I guess, of Italians. It's kind of bizarre. That's his takeaway of what opera is. They have a very lengthy conversation about stuff in general, and I again zoned out because a lot of these are just kind of, they're a lot of political discussions. But there's, you never get the sense, and Tommy, of course, is always playing all sides, but you never get the sense that he has convictions of his own. He says he does, but you don't ever get the sense that he really does. He just lets people talk about what their convictions are and then plays devil's advocate a bit, which, whatever. So the Mosley is returning. We get to see him doing fascist
Oh,
things.
no, there's stuff before that. Tommy tells him tells Solomon's about the opium, I guess. Then Gina meets with Michael in prison and he will be freed in a few weeks. She's there to say goodbye before she leaves for London. He tells her to stay away from Tommy. Michael's determined to be the one to kill Tommy, and Uncle Jack will collect the money Tommy doesn't get. They plan to screw each other remotely because they trust each other. So I guess they're just going to like get off on their own and be like at 5 a.m. her time and 12 and midnight his time. So remote fucking. There you go.
That is not
So
the same thing as it is in this day and age where apparently people do that kind of thing, like over whatever, Zoom and stuff. I guess
well, they
people.
didn't have Zoom, did they? It was the 30s.
Exactly my point. Like people didn't do remote screwing. That was not like.
But they did because they're weird. Tommy and Lizzie attend a talk Mosley is giving. We meet Mosley's mistress, latest mistress. Mosley is dressed like Steve Jobs. Arthur shows up high and Tommy's upset. Tommy wrote to Linda to forgive Arthur, and he gives Arthur her response. All she said was she does believe in forgiveness. If Arthur stays clean for 2 weeks, he'll write her another letter. Tommy will write her another letter and he can get her back. Arthur, I don't know what good that would do, but sure. Arthur joins a fight between Jewish people and the black shirts, and Tommy joins after to keep him from killing anybody. Lizzie wants to forget about the business, but Tommy doesn't want to. Mosley is trying to be the prime minister, and his mistress has a dramatic entrance, complete with lighting changes.
Which again,
Diana.
there's a lot of very unrealistic for the 30s stuff going on here, but okay.
Magical realism, mother. Diana is involved in Mosley's
Diana
enterprise.
is Mosley's girl, by the way.
Yes,
She's
that's what I was going to tell them.
sorry.
She's involved in Mosley's enterprise, and Lizzie joins the meeting, but immediately leaves. Okay. Tommy tells Mosley about Nelson getting importing license is in London. Yeah, Lizzie leaves the room after telling the mistress she has screwed Mosley. Okay. Mosley wants Tommy to do something about Lizzie. I don't know what, but sure. Tommy meets with Jack Nelson. I completely zoned out, is what I wrote down. They talk about Catholicism.
Yeah, so they meet, and I've forgotten what cathedral they meet in. It's lovely. I was like just fascinated with the beautiful, the fact that they're.
I just completely zoned out.
But Jack wants to meet Mosley, because he's interested in fascism, and so Tommy knows both sides of England, and he makes it clear to Jack's like, look, I've got the cards here. You're on my playing field now. I know both sides of what's happening here. I know Mosley. And I know Winston Churchill is against Mosley, and I know who's playing whom. I'm involved in all of it, and if I can give you all of this information in exchange for South Boston and the opium trade there. But if you don't want to do that, you don't get my information. That's kind of the way it goes. We see that Lizzie goes looking for Ruby. Ruby has very dark, violent drawings. And Lizzie finds Ruby staring into the fireplace and saying she hears voices. She's feverish. And there's a montage here of Ruby being feverish and coughing up blood, and Lizzie, you know, getting the doctors involved while Tommy's giving a speech in Parliament. There is some kind of ninja guy, although he's clearly like Irish or something. And he's in Tommy's office, but you know, he's got his face painted black. He's wearing all black, and he
Oh.
attacks Tommy. This is actually a vision that Tommy's
I
having.
was about to say, Mom, he's just one of the people. He's not a ninja. He's one of the people from the tunnels.
Well, I mean, the way it's done though, like he appears in the office, but then Tommy has a flashback to the tunnels.
Yeah, they did the vision weirdly where we weren't
I did.
expecting it to be like that. It was weird.
Yeah, it was weird. Tommy, you know, kills the guy in the vision, but it's not real. And then we hear Grace breathing.
Well, and then he gets home and calls Esme.
Yeah, because he
He's
thinks that
desperate.
he's desperate. So, what were your best parts of this?
Tommy caring about his kids. You don't really see it that often. Ada, again, for keeping her shit together, and her taking care of Arthur in a way. And Johnny Dogs. I forget why I put him, but he's there.
Yeah, there was not a lot of good in this episode to me. That I am foreshadowing is a theme for the season. I like the strategy Tommy has. I like, you know, the discussion he has with Jack Nelson, like, hey, I've got shit you don't. Lizzie has some okay scenes. Ada does too. I haven't been talking about Ada very much because Ada really starts stepping up a little bit more later in the season, and she does become a best part for me. There just isn't a lot of her, and so I haven't included her. But that's all I've got. What were your worst parts?
Random shaky cam. There's a lot of handheld camera work in this season. I do not know why.
That seems really strange, doesn't it?
Well, just watch a scene next time and look really closely to if it's moving or if it's a steady cam, because I noticed there was a lot of like just regular shots, like a medium shot that was just like shake a little bit shaky for no reason. Like I noticed it several times. Grace is breathing again. Mosley for being a fascist. Arthur, the supernatural stuff that they're trying to do with, it's not supernatural exactly. It's just they're trying to make it seem like it's supernatural because the poor little girl's having hallucinations because of her fever, but they're making it seem like it's a supernatural thing. She's giving Will Byers energy, which I don't love, but it is what it is. And a lot of PTSD. I would like to say I'm okay with there being, again, hallucinations. Like, again, I wasn't completely against Horse Ghost Grace and the hallucinations therein. But there are other things that he can hallucinate about other than the war. Like he's gone through a lot of shit. Like it's not just the
That's true.
war.
That's
Like
true.
I think that, and there's a reason why he's having these hallucinations, and we'll find out later. But it's just like, I don't understand why it's limited to the war. Like, do they make for more interesting looking ones? Yes. And maybe they couldn't get some other actors back. Like, you could have one with John. You could have one with Grace. You could have lots of different things. Like, I mean, you have a lot of possibilities galore. He's lost a lot of people in his life. And obviously, you can't do one with Polly, but you can have like remembrances of Polly, like flashbacks or something.
The
But
Russians did a bunch of weird shit to him, so yeah, I mean, you got.
yeah, I think there are just a lot of different things that like they could do, but they just didn't. And so that's disappointing. And then the way that they did the vision in this way was making it seem, I wish they had stuck with a single way they did it, because like in the first time we see it in the bathtub, it makes sense. It's like he's like convulsing on the ground. There's water around him, and of course he's thinking of the tunnels in the water and all that stuff. And so that makes a lot of sense. But he wasn't like he was imagining the bathtub was that. It's not like, you know what I mean? It wasn't
Yeah.
like we confusing real life with no, sorry, reality with his vision. Whereas in the second time, and this is within the same episode too, of like you have like beginning of the episode, that's when that happens. And then you have this random guy with paint all over his face, like coming at him, and it's just like, what the fuck is happening? Who
Yeah.
is this man? And then it's just like, okay, but again, I wish they had stuck with a consistent one where it made a little bit more sense. That's all I'll say about that. But
Yeah, so my worst parts, the Alfie sequence, I felt was again too,
long.
as so many of them are, Mosley just being a fascist and a Nazi and evil. Gina, I just despise Gina. And Jack, I felt like why would this random South Boston guy be interested in fascism? Like, what the fuck, man? But whatever. So that, what grade did you give this episode?
B minus as well.
I gave this a C plus.
You know what? It probably is worse than the last episode
Yeah.
because there was even less stuff to talk about.
Exactly. Spoiler, we have more episodes to review. Season 6 of Peaky Blinders.
Unfortunately. And then
Spoiler.
we have fucking Umbrella Academy season 4 after this, and then oh.
Yeah, like you're trying to sell the show here. Come on. So we actually are looking forward to talking about them and sharing our thoughts with you. And we hope that you join us. And
Cheers.